Hello, and welcome to Pod Emperor of Dune. I'm Elaine, a longtime sci-fi fantasy fan, reading Frank Herbert's classic science fiction Dune Saga for the very first time. I'm joined by my co-host Alex, who is tackling his first reread. Join our chapter-by-chapter deep dive into the series, as I make wildly incorrect predictions, Alex tries not to give anything away, and together, we learn to walk without rhythm.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Alex here, as always, with Elaine.
Hey, guys.
And we're here for our special, as promised, Dune trailer episode. The trailer dropped on Wednesday, and we definitely have opinions and feelings about it. So, good to be here talking about it.
All right, so do you want to just dive right in? We're going to do just kind of a scene-by-scene breakdown of the trailer and talk about our thoughts on the trailer itself and the castings as we come upon those people in the trailer.
Yeah, so we're basically going to walk through, I don't know if frame by frame is the right way to say it. We're
not going to be not like... quite that.
Yeah, not quite that, but just point out...
In this
out,
frame, Paul does this. In the next frame, he takes one step. In the next frame, he takes another step.
Yeah, we're not going to be that detail-oriented with this, but there are a lot of things that you can pick out of the trailer just from what we saw. And if you've read the book, then there's just so much there that you can recognize as being in certain areas of the plot. So we can definitely call out some of that. But yeah, as Elaine was saying, we'll talk about some of the actors as we go through, and at the end we'll just kind of talk about our general thoughts about the movie with what we've seen so far, because we had this. We also had that Colbert interview, the panel interview that was also released with this, so there's more information there. And then we also did get some questions for our Q&A, so at the end we'll dive into that and give you guys some answers to those questions, and then we'll wrap up.
Sounds good.
All right, so starting with the trailer. So the trailer was about 3 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, we saw most of the characters, I think, that have been cast in this, at least in major roles, right?
I think the main exception is maybe Peter.
Peter and Thufir?
I think Thufir is briefly glimpsed in a scene, but he's not focused on. So, unsurprisingly, we start off with Paul.
Yes, we do. He's talking about changes that he's going through, and we're not talking about puberty, we're talking about vivid dreams that he has that seem to come true. And this is sort of overlaid with audio from the Gom Jabbar scene, which was also in the teaser trailer for the trailer that some people were able to see beforehand.
The first teaser trailer for the trailer, because there was also a second teaser trailer that was basically just a pan over shot of all the characters' faces.
Right. Yeah, we get to see more of that Gom Jabbar scene here. So that's that, but the audio for that is overlaid with Paul talking about these changes he's going through. We can see his dreams that he's having of Chaney, which are, of course, integral to, like, the first couple chapters of the book where he's having his initial prescient dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentions that there's a crusade coming. So this is something that a lot of people were picking apart about the use of the word crusade.
Relative to jihad, which is more commonly used in the novel.
Mm-hmm. So something to keep an eye on, I guess, if they implement that as being, like, the word to use throughout the movie. Or movies, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. However, it is used once or twice in the book, and it could just be that that's the word that happens to me in the trailer. So there's a lot of reading into the use of one word in a trailer,
I think. So I think it's hard to say whether it's because it's more comfortable for the Western vernacular or if it's just it happened to be the word that was there. But regardless.
So while he's talking about this oncoming crusade, you can see a shot of a city on fire with who we believe to be Paul and Jessica looking out over it. So this is presumably after the fall of Arrakeen, as they've escaped into the desert.
Yep. So then we cut back to this Mohaim-Paul interaction, where Mohaim is asking about Paul's dreams and whether they're prescient. Paul has the Gom Jabbar test on screen, which is obviously clipped because they're not going to show us the whole thing in the trailer, but...
Mm-hmm. They do show a significant portion of the scene, though.
Yeah, they do. And from what I can see, I like it. I like that the Gom Jabbar is like a little needle. It's not like a thimble with a pinpoint at the end.
It reminds me of, like, those sword letter openers that some people have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to have one of those.
I think we still do somewhere.
Yeah. So that scene I thought was generally pretty cool. What did you think of Mohaim's getup?
So once again, the Bene Gesserit have weird headgear, but honestly, in this case, I kind of liked it. I liked the, not quite beaded, but sort of mesh-ish veil that she's wearing. Mm-hmm. I think it looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I also wonder if it's, like, the regular Bene Gesserit attire, or maybe it's a Reverend Mother thing, or maybe it's just, like, a...
Imperial Truthsayer thing?
Could be, but I was thinking Mohaim's coming to Caladan, maybe she doesn't want to be seen as much, and it's sort of like an incognito Bene Gesserit thing.
I feel like wearing a
mesh and partially see-through face veil will just draw attention to you well, rather than concealing your identity.
I'm just thinking it sort of hides your face, right? So maybe. I don't know.
That's fair. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that's just a Mohayam thing or a Bene Gesserit uniform sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I did think the box itself was kind of cool, mm-hmm. and it didn't really, at least from what we could see, have that cheesiness you had in the miniseries and the movie where you have, like, the hand CGI. I doubt they're going to do anything like that with this.
Yeah, I understand the impulse to do it, but I think it's hard to do well, and I don't think you need it as long as you can communicate via the actor and his expression and voice and everything, the degree of pain that he's in. Like, I don't need to see his hand crisp into a skeleton or something.
Yeah, honestly, Chalamet is a pretty good actor from what I've seen him in, so I think if you have a good actor who's able to show that they're in pain, that should tell the whole story, right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, and she literally says, pain is in the box, so it's not like anyone in the audience is going to be like, I wonder what's happening.
Yeah, but CGI definitely isn't a substitute for poor acting, so I think they're going to be able to nail it with just the acting there.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a shot of Paul walking along the beach on Caladan. We have some interesting-looking ships in the sky. Mm-hmm. And Paul's in his badass-looking black trench coat. And I have to say, so far, like we were talking about Mohayam, I like the costumes. And throughout the trailer, you see a lot of different costumes. You see the still suits and Harkonnen uniforms and all sorts of different stuff. And it all looks really cool.
Yeah, I really like pretty much everything. Because I think in both the 1984 film and in the miniseries, we both had issues with certain costuming choices.
Mm-hmm.
And thus far, I haven't seen anything in this trailer that stands out to me as something I really disliked or really was jarring to me.
Right.
Overall, I think it looked really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that we get to see Caladan in, like, its full glory, because we didn't get that in either of the other two adaptations. We didn't even have Caladan with the miniseries, and I think for the film, they were on Caladan, but we never got any outside shots, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much just in the Atreides household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they get on the ships and they head up to the guild ship. Then after that, we get a shot of Paul and Gurney dueling, and I think you had the same thought I had. The shields look fucking great.
Yeah, well, I was watching a little apprehensively, having been burned by the 1984 movie, but I was quite relieved to see that the shields look quite well done. Basically, what I kind of imagined the shields to look like, a kind of shimmer haze effect over the person, not this really opaque or blocky looking nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I pictured it really lighting up when it gets hit, but I think that's a good effect for a visual medium where you want to see how it's impacting the fight. So I really liked how that worked out.
Yeah, the other thing is a concern which some people had was that you don't really see a slowing effect here with the shields. But I think that can be excused because it's a trailer. And they also do this effect with the trailer, which I've seen with a lot of more modern trailers. I don't know when people started doing this, but with things like sword fights and gunshots, they try to synchronize them with the percussion of whatever music is in the background just to get that effect and make it more impactful. So they probably just chopped together a lot of pieces of the fight scene to try to line it up with the percussion of the audio that was in the background. So I don't think you'd be able to see that effect anyway with this.
Yeah, it could also be that that's just a difficult thing to portray visually, and so they might be focusing more on what a shield does to fast motions, where you're seeing that it stops fast motions, and that's the more important thing to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, as you said, it's a trailer. We don't know what the full portrayal is going to be. And also, for a significant portion of both the book and presumably the film, shields aren't used anyway, so.
Right. Exactly.
At least not in hand-to-hand combat.
You don't have those big-ass worms creeping up on you. And the only other thing of note with this is the shield belt, which seems to be like a wristwatch instead of the belt.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be easier for you to, you know, bring your hands together to activate it rather than having to, like, fumble around at your waist.
Right. Yeah, I think it is more practical. All right, then next we get a shot of Leto and his bearded glory, which is pretty great. I like Oscar Isaac with a beard.
I think you'll find yourself in quite a lot of company if the internet is to be believed.
Yes. For all those other people who refer to him as Daddy Leto. Because, yeah.
I think my favorite is when someone photoshopped the cover of whatever new Dune prequel's coming out, which I believe is like the Duke of Caladan, and someone renamed it and photoshopped it the Daddy of Caladan.
Oh, that's great.
Pretty great. Anyway.
Yeah, so he's putting his hand on some sort of a monument or a gravestone or something. I'm assuming it's Leto's father, but we don't really know.
I can't imagine who else it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mulheim is talking in the background about how none of Paul's ancestors had learned to rule others, so presumably he's at least putting his hand on the monument of some Atreides.
Yeah, that would make sense thematically. So we get some great shots of Caladan while Paul retorts that his father rules Caladan and soon will rule Arrakis, and Mulheim is like, yeah, he's not going to keep him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're putting a decent amount of exposition in the trailer.
Yes, they really are. I mean, I guess it makes sense. It's a pretty dense plot, so maybe giving people a little bit of a primer before they go in is helpful.
Mm-hmm. So do you think they did enough?
I don't know. I think it's a balancing act, because I also hate the recent trend of trailers where they just give the whole freaking movie away. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's hard because I know the plot, so it's hard to know what's enough versus too much for someone who's maybe new to the franchise.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So next we definitely shift to Arrakis, because we get some shots of Leto and Jessica standing on Arrakis with Paul, and there's an Atreides entourage behind them. And then after that, we get a sweeping shot of a lot of people exiting large ships, so presumably these are the Atreides arriving on Arrakis.
I believe the backdrop to all of this Arrakis footage is Mulheim intoning that Arrakis is a death trap, so encouraging.
Yeah, certainly. And then we get a shot of Paul running out to get embraced by Duncan, so you clearly get the sense that their friendship is going to be shown in this, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this bit of the trailer. Jason Momoa just expresses so well how excited Duncan is to see Paul, and mm-hmm. he just got this look of joy on his face in this kind of, I don't even know, big brother affection sort of way.
I was going to say that cool older brother energy yes. is sort of what he was exuding in that scene.
It kind of reminds me of that meme everyone likes to share of him creeping up on the red carpet behind Henry Cavill.
Yes, it is pretty similar to that. Then after that, we get a shot of Stilgar, who's taking off his mask in the desert. Not really much more to say about that, but we do get to see Stilgar there.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've already seen in promotional footage the still suits and everything, but I really do like the attention to detail with the suits and the mask.
Yep.
So then we get a shot of a whole bunch of soldiers who we presume are Harkonnens, given that it's immediately followed by a shot of Beast Robin, who looks on the pale side, shall we say.
Yep. Yeah, definitely on the pale side. And I don't know if this is true, but I heard that Denis Villeneuve was sort of taking the angle of Gedi Prime being, like, a polluted planet and having not a lot of sunlight, so the Harkonnens would probably be of a very pale complexion.
I think that makes sense, because we immediately follow that with a shot of the Baron himself, who is also pale and has no hair, so it seems to be just the look of the Harkonnens. I wonder if Fade, who we don't see, and theoretically hasn't been cast, right?
Right, yeah, we haven't had a Fade casting at all.
So, who knows what he's going to look like, but I wonder if he's going to share the other Harkonnen's aesthetic, or if he's going to be more handsome-looking and charismatic.
Well, they're definitely going to bring back Sting to play him. That's got to happen, right?
Only if he wears the metal bikini.
And they're going to have to CGI age him down a bit, but you know, you do what you got to do.
But yeah, I like that detail about their aesthetic being related to Gedi Prime being this industrial, polluted world. Mm-hmm. I think that's a cool detail, if true.
Yeah, and it draws a lot of contrast to the Atreides and them coming from this green, lush world with oceans.
Mm-hmm. So in the shot of the Baron, it's very brief, and he just says, kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And we immediately then cut to the palm trees of Arrakis on fire.
Yep. So if they're trees and they're on Arrakis, they're definitely in Arrakeen City, so we know this is after the Atreides have fallen.
Mm-hmm. Or at least during the attack.
Mm-hmm. Because after this, we get Paul saying, or during this, we get Paul saying, this is an extermination.
Mm-hmm.
And then, interestingly enough, we get a shot of Yue, so you've read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I like the way Yue looks. I like that they brought back the mustache, because we didn't have that in the miniseries. We did have it in 1984 Dune, but they're bringing it back here.
Yeah, I think he looked really great. He honestly looks very much like my mental picture of what Yue would look like.
Mm-hmm. Alright, then after that, we see some troops descending, and we cut to Paul and Leto walking in stillsuits along with a couple of Atreides troops. So I'm assuming this is when they are walking to meet Kynes, because they were both wearing stillsuits, and I think that's the only time that we had the Duke wearing a stillsuit, in the book at least, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So unless they made up a new scene, but I would bet that this is that harvester factory spice harvesting scene.
Mm-hmm. So then we get an up-close shot of one of the soldiers who landed, and they have different uniforms than the Harkonnens had. They don't have that black armor. They have, like, sort of like a grayish white armor with helmets that have, like, glass coverings on the front. And I think I saw some tattoos on his head, too. So I'm assuming this is one of the Sardaukar.
Yeah, it is interesting that they would have different armor, though, because aren't they supposed to be disguised as Harkonnens?
Yeah, well, I think at least some of them were disguised as Harkonnens, but maybe they had some that weren't.
Yeah, or it's just visual shorthand for the audience to know who's who.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the more reasonable assumption. Which, honestly, I'm fine with, because some of those little pieces of nuance are just going to get lost anyway, so you might as well. If you have to cut things out, that's the type of thing I would cut out, honestly.
So then we cut to a line that I don't remember whether or not it's from the book, but it's Duncan saying, "Let's fight like demons."
Yeah, I don't think that was in the book.
I don't remember it, but I think it works.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
And here he's fighting people in a steel suit. This is probably when he's fighting the Sardaukar to help Paul escape.
Yeah, so we see him in a steel suit. Then we get some general fighting in Arakene, and then it cuts back to Duncan, who's fighting in a shirt this time. So there's three different Duncans we see in this. There's the one at the beginning who has the facial hair, so he's got like a goatee going on and he's wearing his steel suit. And this is when Paul arrives on Arrakis, and it's like the Duncan who's been with the Fremen for a while that we see. Then we also get the one who's in the steel suit but doesn't have the goatee. And then we have the one who's in the shirt and doesn't have the goatee. So my assumption is the first Duncan is the one with the goatee and the steel suit, obviously, because it's the one who's at Arrakis in the first place, right? Then I'm assuming the one in the shirt is second, because I think when House Atreides gets attacked, you know, it's at night, nobody's ready, so he's probably in a t-shirt. And if they have the banquet scene, maybe he was, like, dressed up for the banquet or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But if he shaved, he was probably shaving for an event, maybe? I don't know. Or maybe Duke Leto saw him and was like, "I'm the only one who can have a beard, so you better shave that damn thing off."
Oscar Isaac is very jealous of his facial hair.
Yep. And then the one we see at the end is him without the beard, but he does have the steel suit on. And I'm assuming he's fighting Sardaukar because they're the troops that have the different armor from the Harkonnens.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting because you get that brief shot of him saying, "Let's fight like demons." And in that one, he has the beard and the steel suit. But then it immediately transitions to him fighting, in which he doesn't have the beard. Which I didn't actually catch until you pointed
it
out.
But he does have the steel suit, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably he's fighting Sardaukar, because that would take place once he's out in the desert with Kynes and the Atreides, so it would make sense that he'd be wearing a steel suit in that scene, right?
Yeah, so I'm assuming that scene is his last stand.
Yes, presumably.
Mm-hmm. So then we go back to the Gom Jabbar. Mohaim is saying her line about animals gnawing off their own limbs and asking what Paul will do in that scenario. Then we get a shot of Chaney and Paul's dream, and then Paul with the pistol drawn. So I'm assuming this is the pistol that he took from the Fremen when they have that initial kerfuffle when they meet up with them.
Mm-hmm. He takes it off Jaemys, right?
Yeah, I believe he does.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense.
Then after that, we get a shot of Chaney sliding off a rock, which I think is the same from the photos we've seen of Chaney. I think one of the early promotional photos of Chaney was the same image of
her
sliding
off
the rock. Then after that, we get a giant battle montage. We have these dropships descending, lots of explosions. We get to see an ornithopter.
Mm-hmm.
And the ornithopters look fucking cool. I like the ornithopters in this. But, I mean, before, what did we get for ornithopters? We got, like, a
flying boxes.
We got, like, a brick, and then we got, I don't even remember what was in the miniseries, but it wasn't that great. And in this, they look like dragonflies. They look really cool.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Maybe not quite bird-like as Frank may have imagined the ornithopter to be, but I think it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Then after seeing the ornithopter and this battle, we get to see some quick shots of the cast. So we see Gurney wincing from an explosion, and he looks kind of disheveled. So I'm assuming, again, this is after,
or during the attack on Arakene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's also, I think, like wearing a jacket over a shirt, so he's not in a steel suit or anything like that.
So anyway, maybe taken by surprise.
Yeah, it looks like he got woke up in the middle of the night, so kind of like Duncan looked like in that like fighting shot we saw with him in a shirt. So presumably this is happening in the same time frame.
Mm-hmm. Then we get another shot of the Baron, who is emerging from a pool of oily gunk. So I wonder if that's meant to be a callback to the 1984 film when the Baron is floating around bathing in essentially an oil fountain.
Yeah, it could have been a callback to that. I mean, unless they make it completely ridiculous, I'm fine with it. I mean, if like this is like the beginning, he starts emerging and then suddenly he turns on a jetpack and just flies out of it, that I'm going to have a little bit of an issue with.
Yeah, if he does the drunk Mary Poppins whirling around the room thing, I'll be a little frustrated, but The pool of oil is fine.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't do that and then proceeds to rip a slave boy's nipple off and then, you know, rips the ear off of a cow that's in the corner of the room.
And feeds it to his nephew.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. All right. Hopefully we don't get that. Anyway.
I trust Denis.
Yeah. In Denis we trust. Then we get a shot of Jessica walking down a hallway. And then Duncan doing the sword salute. And this is once again with him without the goatee. So I'm assuming this is right before his last stand. And then we get a shot of Paul doing the same salute. So this must just be like an Atreides salute, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get a shot of what's definitely the Harvester rescue, because we have Paul and Gurney, like, on the ramp of the Ornithopter.
Watching a sandworm eat an entire Harvester factory.
Basically, we see the Harvester falling into this sand whirlpool, this enormous sand whirlpool that's below this, so this is definitely the worm consuming the Harvester. Then after that, we get a shot of Yue walking with some pale, bald men in dark armor. Looks like the same armor that we saw right before we saw Robin. So I'm assuming this is him after he's been taken in by the Harkonnens after the house has fallen. So
yeah, probably when they're escorting him to the Baron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he looks a little bit distressed anyway, so
mm-hmm.
I think that's definitely what's happening here.
So then we cut to what I believe is our first shot of Kynes.
I think so, yep.
And we also get our first really good look at the eye effect that they use in the movie. And so while I don't think it was super clear from the promotional photos and things that we saw, we can see that, in fact, all of the parts of the eye are blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the sclera part of the eye is a very pale blue, but mm-hmm. it's definitely there.
Yeah, I think this is such a cool effect, because personally, that's exactly the way I pictured it in my head when I was reading the book, so it's great to see it that way on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like Kynes. I like what they did. I know some people are, like, bitchy about gender bending the character, and honestly, like, it doesn't matter at all. It has zero impact on the story, so I could give less of a shit about that.
Mm-hmm. But, and honestly, she looks baller as hell.
Yeah, she does. And even, like, some of the photos you've seen of her, she has, like, badass-looking hair and stuff. She just looks awesome, so great to see her in this. Then we get a shot of some fopters flying over some rocks, and again, they look a lot like dragonflies. The things look so fucking cool. Then we get a shot of Robin walking with some Harkonnen troops looking pretty damn menacing.
I feel like that's just his M.O.
Yeah, I think that's looking probably menacing. Reasonable.
Being menacing.
Then we get a shot of Leto, who's in a white shirt, and he's kneeling over someone who touches him, and then you can clearly see a bloody handprint on mm-hmm. his shirt.
So there was a bit of a Twitter outcry where people were like, where's Mapes in this trailer? And then people were like, the bloody handprint is definitely Mapes.
Absolutely Mapes.
So she's there, just probably dying.
At least her hemoglobin is there. Then we get some quick shots of Paul and Stilgar, and then Paul holding a knife to a Fremen in the desert. And this Fremen must be Jaemus.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what other Fremen Paul would be threatening in this way. I think just plot-wise, it seems more likely that
that's true.
It would be Jaemus rather than some random new Fremen they invented.
Yeah, I mean, unless
most of the other Fremen don't really have names as characters, right?
Yeah, and I mean, unless it's Paul training them in the weirding way or something like that, it's definitely that initial scene where Paul and Jessica come across Stilgar and his band of Fremen and they have their initial little fight, so.
Yeah, and I kind of doubt that there'll be any training montages until the second movie, because I think we expect that this movie would end pretty shortly after the Jaemus fight.
Yes, I think that's probably how it's going to go down. Especially based on everything we've seen in this trailer, there's no hint that there's going to be anything beyond that point, mm-hmm. except for the fact that Robin didn't really play a big role in the first part of the book, like the first half of the book. He was kind of more present. Well, he's only really in one chapter, right? But his role was really more after the Harkonnens took over the planet again, and then they were kind of managing things again on Arrakis, right?
Yeah, I think what they might be doing is, so obviously the Baron is not going to be leading any attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might want to have kind of a face for the Harkonnen troops.
Yeah.
And so maybe Robin would lead them in the attack. And they can kind of integrate him more equally into the two parts of the story that way.
Yeah. I have also seen a theory that maybe Robin is also replacing Fade in this, and it's just going to be one character. I don't think that's likely, because I think if they were going to do that, they'd have it be Fade, not Robin,
mm-hmm.
who'd be the one character, so I'm doubtful about that theory.
Mm-hmm. They also just might want to introduce Robin because of Gurney's whole vendetta against him.
That's a good point.
So they probably want to at least introduce who he is and give a face to that backstory.
Yeah, plus the other thing, too, is the second half of Dune doesn't focus as much on House Atreides itself, because it's mostly in disorder, right? It's mostly just focusing on the Fremen, and they're snapping back to the Harkonnens and the Imperials at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be able to give Fade a lot more screen time. So maybe they're just making the decision to sort of, like, fill up the second movie with more Fade screen time and do it that way.
Yeah, that's fair. And, I mean, people have made the point that several of the big characters from this first film will be dead by the second film. Mm-hmm. So leave some room for some new casting.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we see Duncan walking in the darkness with fires all around him in his t-shirt. So this, again, must be after House Atreides fell. So he's probably walking out of the Great Hall into the fighting outside. Then we get another shot of Chaney, another shot of Paul. Then we finally get to see the scene where Paul and Jessica escape in the Fopter into the sandstorm, which, as we know, happened after they left Kynes and they were going out, and then later they meet up with Stilgar.
Mm-hmm. Then we get a shot of Paul picking up some sparkly sand, which we can probably assume is full of spice.
Yep. I think that's a safe assumption, which is definitely a step up, because I think the only other time we saw spice in the desert was in the miniseries, where they just, like, basically put some blue gunk on the ground instead of the spice. So I like this sparkly effect instead.
Yeah, I think it looks cool.
Then we get a shot of Duncan in a still suit. He kneels before Paul and says, "My Lord Duke." So this is definitely after Leto is dead.
Yep.
And it's also, once again, clean-shaven Duncan in a still suit, so...
Supporting your conspiracy theory here.
I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think it's a valid theory.
No, it's valid. I'm just making fun. I haven't seen anyone focus on the various states of Jason Momoa's dress quite as much as you.
Anyway, then we get Paul reciting the litany in the background after the Thopter scene. We have a shot of Paul walking with hands touching him, which I'm assuming are Fremen.
Mm-hmm.
So this must be Paul racking up some prophecy points.
Yep.
And then we close out the trailer with some worm sign, which definitely looks really cool.
This is definitely the scene where Paul and Jessica are running through the desert trying to escape the oncoming sandworm, which rises up behind them, and we get our first glimpse of the beast in its full glory.
Yep. So what did you think of the sandworm?
Honestly, the thing that I thought was most striking was the teeth, which I had pictured more as, I don't know, fang-like, I guess. And to me, they looked kind of like baleen.
Okay.
Side note, I voiced this thought to Alex a few days ago and learned that, unlike apparently every other American child, he was never taught the difference between baleen whales and toothed whales.
All right, now hold up.
Unless my school was just weird and most people don't learn about whales, but I feel like I learned about different types of whales multiple times. But anyway, I thought their teeth looked like baleen.
Yeah, I did take a marine biology class once, but I don't think we covered the specifics of baleen.
Anyway, what did you think of the worm?
I thought it looked pretty cool. I thought it was interesting because a lot of the times you see worms, they seem to have, and maybe this is because it was a frontal shot of the worm's mouth, but you have like... almost like these, like, four pincers around the mouth. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of art, and they have kind of a Demogorgon mouth, like in Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly. So, maybe it's because its mouth is wide open, so you don't see those. Maybe they just decided not to go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're ever explicitly described as being part of the worm's anatomy, so it might just be artistic license that Denis Villeneuve and the effects guys didn't share.
Right, maybe.
I mean, I don't know of any... earthworms that have mouth pincers. Although, to be fair, I don't really know what a worm's mouth looks like, so.
Yeah. All right, so we can probably both tell by our enthusiastic nature about this, but what did you think of the trailer overall?
It got me pretty excited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't tell everything about a movie from a trailer, obviously. Who knows how comprehensible the plot will be? Who knows what they'll include or not include? But at least in terms of how it looks fantastic. Like, the design and the costuming and the effects that we've seen in the trailer, everything looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives me a measure of confidence.
Yeah, I definitely had the same feelings about it as well. I thought it looked absolutely fantastic. And as we were able to pick out from this, there's a ton of different pieces that crop up in this trailer that just look great and seem great. So hopefully we're in for a really solid movie. I think a lot of scenes that we haven't really seen in some other adaptations might pop up. I think we're finally going to get a last stand for Duncan that's cool and not like the one in the Dune movie where he randomly dies when they're trying to leave Arrakeen.
Or in the miniseries where he just gets blown up.
Yeah, which is also lame. So
I really, yeah, I want to see him go down fighting.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to get some incredible acting because the cast is really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Then back to scenes for a second. Another scene that we're definitely going to get, it wasn't in the trailer, but the Thopter scene where Paul kicks the guy's heart through his chest, I think we're definitely getting that because if you look up the IMDb for this movie, there was a deaf Harkonnen soldier cast in this, which was a critical piece of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't be someone who is listed as a cast member if they weren't going to do that scene. So,
yeah, that makes sense. That's a cool detail. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as we said, in terms of like the movie itself, we can definitely pick apart what this movie is going to encapsulate, right? It's probably going to end after the fight with Jameis in some form, with Paul becoming like a member of the Fremen and probably getting the name Muad'Dib.
Or possibly after the Water of Life ritual.
That's also,
because that happens like a day or two after, I think, or very shortly after.
Yeah.
So it might end there, because that's right before the 2-year time jump.
Mm-hmm.
So they could include that and end it there.
The only thing that holds me back from thinking maybe that would be the case is nobody's been cast as Romalo, which I figure is someone you would definitely want to cast.
That's true.
So maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, that's interesting, though, because then you'd still want to incorporate the time jump, and then if that's the only scene that happens in the second movie before the time jump, that would be an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they just haven't publicized who Romalo is.
It's possible.
That seems odd, though. Yeah, that's a good... I'll be interested to see what they decide to do about that.
Mm-hmm. That's also the type of thing that could be, like, a cool piece to throw in early in the second movie.
Yeah.
Like in the first act of the second movie, so to speak.
Well, it would have to, because the time jump has to happen for Aaliyah to exist as a character, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, you could start off with the whole Water of Life piece and Jessica becoming a full Reverend Mother, and then, like, the second part of that is, you know, the time jump, and you get Paul becoming basically the leader of the Fremen. We'd have, like, a ton of Fade character growth thrown in there. I mean, that might not be enough time for that either, right? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they throw this thing together. We can speculate as much as we want, but we're definitely going to get it wrong.
Yes. All right, so before we finish talking about the trailer, do we want to quickly go over what we think about the casting of the various characters?
Yeah, let's do that. So I think generally for me, everyone we saw looks great. The people we probably get the least of are Kynes and the Baron, and we've already said Kynes looks great, mm-hmm. so we're cool with that. The Baron, we barely see any of, but what we see, I like. I think it's pretty clear they're not going with the cartoonish villain vibe that we both had issues with.
Yeah, it definitely seems a bit more serious.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely like that take. I think a lot of them were what I expected. We know Chalamet's a good actor. I don't doubt he's going to be a good Paul.
I mean, the quality of the casting, mm-hmm. or of just the cast in general, is fantastic. These yeah. are primarily awesome A-list actors.
Exactly. I think I would just have to say, I mean, like I said, they all look great. I think the two that stood out to me the most in this, one was definitely Momoa as Duncan. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a great Duncan, and I think he's going to breathe a lot of life into that character.
Yeah. He just has this energy that you can see even in the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Then the other one for me was Robin, because we don't get a lot of Robin in the book, and I like Dave Bautista, and I like the way he looks in this, and he looks menacing, and I'm just really interested to see what
they're going to do with his character.
Yeah, because in the other adaptations, they've kind of just made him a dummy. They mm-hmm. made him, like, a dumb brute, and I wonder if they're going to do that with this, or they're just going to make him, like, cruel and menacing, and I think that's probably the more likely approach. They're just going to make him an absolute brute, not a dumbass, but they're going to make him, like, absolutely brutal, and that's going to be, like, the key thing you'll point out about him.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, even in the book, there are some hints that he's not as dumb as everyone thinks he is. Like, he's definitely not going to be a Nobel Prize winner, but...
But there's no Nobel Prizes for, you know, subjugating a populace, right? So
that's fair. I was trying to think of an award smart people would get. And that was the first one that came to mind. But there are some hints that the Baron at least underestimates him.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem like that was really carried over into any other previous adaptations where he basically is just a buffoon.
Right.
Who's constantly berated for being stupid.
Exactly. So what did you think about the cast?
I overall have no problems with any of the casting. I mean, obviously, whenever you read something first and then see an adaptation, you're going to have slightly different pictures in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, a lot of them are quite spot on. And even the ones that aren't, I think, look fantastic.
Yeah.
So, like, I definitely pictured, say, Thufir differently. I pictured him as, like, a tall, skinny, frailer-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly just because he's described as really old a bunch, so that was my mental picture. But I think this guy looks great as Thufir, even though he wasn't in the trailer a lot. So, yeah. Honestly, I'm just really excited to see what they're going to do with these parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the only one that I pictured differently was obviously Kynes, because Kynes wasn't a woman before.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I sort of pictured, like, a younger Jeremy Irons as being, like, a Kynes.
Interesting.
But, like I said before, I have no problem with them gender-bending the role,
mm-hmm.
and I like the casting, so I'm good with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his/her gender doesn't really have any impact on the role in the story, and they're only in a few scenes anyway, so
yeah.
It really doesn't make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they'll still make her Chaney's parent?
I would assume so. Because I think that's an important thing that bonds Paul and Chaney together, that they mm-hmm. both have a parent who's been killed by the Harkonnens.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would get rid of that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see a reason to do that.
I did see some speculation that they might make Stilgar and Kynes a thing to make Stilgar Chaney's father rather than uncle, to kind of simplify the family tree there.
Interesting.
But I don't know if they'll actually do that. I just saw some people theorizing about that.
Hmm. Yeah, well, Stilgar was somewhat of a father figure to Paul as well after he lost his own father. So I know we'll at least get that relationship. But yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see that.
Well, because I remember being confused about how Stilgar was Chaney's uncle, because it was never made clear how they were related.
Mm-hmm.
Except that suddenly she calls him uncle or something.
Yeah.
Oh, one last note. I forgot to mention it when we were going through the trailer is... So there's that scene where we have troops who we think are the Sardaukar, right, dropping in.
Mm-hmm.
So what I really liked is that they have what I assume is an actual effect in the film and not just something for the trailer, where the one is dropping really slowly, like almost in a low grav situation. And I wonder if that's because they're actually going to integrate the suspensor technology, which is mentioned in the scene where they ambush Thufir and that Fremen guy in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
About how they're using the suspensors to, like, slow their fall from wherever they're jumping from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'd be cool because it does seem like if you have suspensor technology, which they obviously do because of the Baron, it seems weird that you wouldn't integrate that into your military in some way.
Yeah, and you know...
So I think it was cool that they actually seems like they maybe are showing that here.
Yeah, and honestly, they could be showing that very scene there.
Mm-hmm.
That's very possible.
Yeah. All right, I think that was my last thought.
All right, cool. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else. Like we said, really good trailer. Definitely looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's going to be any more trailers between now and... When does it come out? December?
It's supposed to come out in December, obviously with everything going on in the world.
And especially the U.S.
Yeah, especially the U.S. I'm not sure. I would hope it at least gets the Tenet treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we'll have to see what happens.
But so they haven't announced that it's delayed at all?
No, they haven't. And as much as I'd love to see this in theaters, I would... rather see it at home sooner.
Yeah.
If that can happen. But
we have a pretty big TV. Just pull the shades, get some popcorn, we'll be good.
Yep. Totally.
And then whenever it's safe to do so again, we could see it in a theater.
Yeah. I definitely won't need, like, a couple alcoholic beverages for this one. I mean, I might have one, but I won't need one for this like I did for the last movie we watched that was Dune.
Yes. So yeah, fingers crossed we still get that December release, and that hopefully, if theaters are still not safe, we get some sort of streaming option for those of us who'd like not to get plague.
Exactly. All right, so now that we've discussed the trailer, let's move on to some Q&A.
So the first question we'll answer is from one of our patrons, and he asks what we do professionally, especially considering that I sounded like I had a science background some episodes back. So, good catch. I do, in fact, have a science background, an entire doctorate, in fact. So, specifically, I'm a biologist, and I work as an R&D scientist. So, in addition to being a sci-fi, fantasy, book, film, TV show, video game nerd, I'm also a science nerd. So, I check all those boxes. Alex, how about you?
So, I'm a consultant. Just kidding. I'm not a consultant. I've always wanted to say that. I've always wanted to, like, at parties and stuff, just be like, oh, I'm a consultant, and then just see if people, like, ask, like, what do you do? Or if they're just like, oh, okay. Because it means nothing. It just means I have a job. No, I'm... No, so I work in the financial technology industry as a business analyst. So that also is kind of like a vague title, but essentially I work with software engineers and I also work with people on the business side. And basically I tell the engineers what they need to build and then they need to figure out how they're going to build it.
So you're like the go-between or the translator between those two groups.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So another question is, what are our favorite sci-fi / fantasy books or universes? So I always find it such a tough question to answer favorites, but I'll do my best. So for sci-fi, I think the first sci-fi book that I really fell in love with was Ender's Game. So not exactly a niche choice there, but... And my pretty enduring love for that book, as well as for the first sequel, Speaker for the Dead, which is incredible in such a different way, probably puts them at the top for me. More recently, because I read that for the first time a long time ago, more recently, I really loved the Expanse novel series, which has also been adapted on Sci-Fi and now Amazon. And it's both a great story and has this really fantastic and fleshed out world building. And most recently, I think I mentioned in a recent podcast that I've been enamored with a novel called Children of Time, which as a biologist just really hit all the right notes for me. And also a novel called Rosewater, which is set in a post-First Contact Nigeria, which I thought was a really cool setting. And getting out of the world of books, I think it would definitely have to be the Star Trek universe. My personal favorite is Deep Space Nine, but I really love most of it. And then for fantasy, honestly, that's even tougher because I probably have read more of that. But I'll do my best. I've already rambled a lot, so I'll keep this one shorter. But I can just say that, well, The Lord of the Rings is classic for a reason. More recently, I've enjoyed the Stormlight Archives because I'm a sucker for a creative hard magic system. And of course, A Song of Ice and Fire, but it's been nearly 10 years since I got to read a new one of those, so it's got a slightly bitter taste to it now. All right, how about you?
So, as you know, others might not know, because I am like the person who's read Dune and you're the person who hasn't read Dune, I am not much of a reader. But yeah, so Star Trek, definitely high on my list, and Deep Space Nine is also my favorite of the Star Treks, but generally, I like all of them. Star Wars is definitely another big one for me. I'm also a big fan of Doctor Who, so those generally are my sci-fi greatest hits. Then for fantasy, Lord of the Rings is definitely at the top of my list, and I'm also a big fan of the Warhammer fantasy universe. And Warhammer is sort of bordering on gaming, so to dive into the gaming universe too, because we're actually both pretty big gamers as well. I basically like everything made by BioWare, so Dragon Age, Mass Effect, as well as Knights of the Old Republic, because as I said, big Star Wars fan. Then the Fallout series, I'm also a pretty big fan of, which I would argue is definitely sci-fi, post-apocalyptic sci-fi. Then also, Warcraft would also definitely be a big one for me as well.
Yeah, I didn't even think about answering this question in terms of gaming, but we definitely have some shared overlap there in terms of BioWare properties and Fallout. I'm also pretty big on the Elder Scrolls franchise, BioShock, the Witcher series, so definitely big on the gaming universes as well, both sci-fi and fantasy. All right, so our next question is specifically for you.
Oh boy.
And so it's a two-part question. So part one is, which of the Dune books is your favorite? And so if you need to say anything spoilery, I can just close my ears. And the second part is, which one of the books are you most excited to have me read and talk about? With the note, and why is it God Emperor of Dune?
All right, so to start with the first part, just to caveat this a bit, I have heard that in subsequent read-throughs, a lot of people's favorites shift in the Dune series, just because they're pretty deep books and you get a lot of different things out of them when you read them at different times. So, for me, having read through it once, my favorite is definitely Messiah, which, based on looking online and seeing people talk about the series, I know that's probably not a popular opinion, but Messiah is definitely my favorite. I sort of consider it to be like The Empire Strikes Back, the original Dune trilogy, not just because it's in the middle, but it really flips the script and changes a lot of things and leads you down some paths that you might not have expected. And I think that happens a lot in the Dune series generally, but Messiah is like the first time that happens because in the first book, it's really a pretty straightforward narrative, but things tend to shift around a little bit in that book. And I can't really say anything more without getting spoilery, but that's basically the gist of it. Then for the second question, which book am I most excited to have Elaine read and talk about? Yeah, so I actually have two answers to this, and yes, one of them is definitely God Emperor, because it's a really wild ride. It turns the universe completely on its head, And it's just such a tonal shift compared to the first three books, which I know is definitely going to drive a lot of interesting conversation on the podcast. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And then the other piece, I'm just lumping them together as one book, Hunters and Sandworms, because originally I think they were going to be one book, but they had to split them into two because it was too long. And the reasoning behind this is just that I'm really interested to see what Elaine thinks of Brian and Kevin J. Anderson's writing compared to Frank Herbert's writing. And I know that there's sort of a touchy subject for a lot of Dune fans. A lot of people, like, love them, hate them, are really melancholy about them. So I'm really interested to see what she thinks about them. And I'm also really interested to see what she thinks about the ending without the prequels.
Well, one day you'll find out what I think about those things, but it will be a while.
Yeah, I get the sense that it's going to be a while.
We've definitely got a lot more book to get through before we get to God Emperor, let alone the last two books.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we have a bit of a funny question where we were asked why I keep calling our favorite Sook doctor Wellington instead of Yue, like literally everyone else refers to him as. And my answer is just that I call all the other characters by their first names, so I found it weird to refer to him by his last name when I don't do that for anyone else. So it's always Gurney, I don't call him Halleck, I don't call him Hawat, I don't call... Well, I guess Atreides would be stupid because there's a bunch of them, but I call everyone by their first names, so I didn't want to weirdly not do that for Wellington Yue.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair point. I'm just going to refer to him as the Doctor from now on.
Getting some crossover there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, he's dead, so I doubt he'll come up much more, but if he does, I will continue calling him Wellington, even if it's a funny name because it's a boot.
Fair enough.
All right, so our next question is more about the behind the scenes. And so the question was what our podcasting setup is.
Mm-hmm.
So in case it wasn't clear by now, we are a married couple.
Yep.
So we don't have to worry about remotely collaborating or anything. We've iterated through a couple of different podcast setups.
Yep.
So we initially had our desks a lot farther apart and we were recording on separate microphones. But that was stupid and caused a lot of problems because... It was really hard to sync up the tracks, and there'd be background noise on the different on one track but not the other. So we have since moved to having our desks closer together and sitting together at a microphone, just having separate pop filters.
Yep, and that has just generally made the whole process a hell of a lot easier.
Especially on the editing side. We really should have done that from the start, but we were young and naive.
Indeed we were. We also record generally pretty far in advance of release. We actually recorded, like, the first 7 or so episodes, maybe, like, a couple months before we even released the podcast.
Oh, yeah, it was a while. I think we recorded our first episode in September of 2019 and didn't release mm-hmm. anything until May of 2020 because we were busy and life got in the way and we were really bad and slow at editing. So it definitely took us some time to develop a backlog and get our flow all together. But now we have a much more... streamlined process, but we still do try to record at least a few weeks ahead of release so that we always have a buffer in case life gets in the way.
Yep. And we're recording this one on the night of Thursday the 10th of September, so you're probably going to hear this in a day or two, but generally speaking, you're probably hearing episodes like a couple weeks after we record them, so generally we don't chime in on any current events with the castings or trailers or anything like that just because... they're so far in advance. Sometimes we do go back and stitch some things in if there's important things that we want to bring up or talk about. But other than that, the meat of the episode was probably recorded a while ago.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this particular episode will definitely be the fastest turnaround you're likely to get. And that's why we wanted to do a Q&A episode like this as a kind of bonus separate thing, because we can't really respond in real time along with the chapters if people did submit questions that way, so...
Yeah, and if you guys like this, definitely let us know, and we'll keep doing these.
Mm-hmm. It's really fun for us to answer questions like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is.
All right, so our next question is about how we got into doing this. So how did we get the idea to start this podcast, and what made us jump into it, considering I think we've said before that we don't have any podcasting experience before this?
Yeah, not before this.
So I believe the story begins when we were at the bookstore, and you wanted to find a... nice, hefty book to take along to read on the beach.
Yes, that is
and
right.
And you settled on Dune.
Yeah, ironically enough, for the beach.
Yeah, right? You had wanted to be starting to get into reading, since, as you've said, you weren't a huge reader.
Mm-hmm.
And you settle on potentially one of the harder books to just jump into, given the lack of exposition in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's definitely not an easy read if you're not used to reading, but, I mean, I loved it. I kept reading through it. It was definitely a book that I couldn't put down, so then I got the next one and the one after that, and I just read through them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely a great experience, and I don't regret it, because obviously we're doing this now, and if I regretted reading it, it probably wouldn't be.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. And so, yeah, I remember you just were so in love with the book and so excited to talk about it, even though you couldn't really talk that much about it since I hadn't read it. But I was planning to eventually. It had just been on my ever-growing lengthy list of things I should read, mm-hmm. if I ever had the time. And so I think you had been looking for ways to interact further with the material. Like, you came across some Dune podcasts. I had been listening to some book podcasts for other works that I'd been reading at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of were just talking one day and we're like, hey, we could do this.
Yep.
And that's kind of...
why not?
We just kind of kept tossing the idea around and like developing it more and coming up with our plan and structure and how we would do it. And I don't know, we thought that having an experienced reader and a first-time reader, which is a format that I really liked in one of the other podcasts that I listened to, would work really well. And we also thought that if we were going to get into this sort of thing, doing a podcast on a property that was about to release a potentially really big movie would be a great thing to get into on mm-hmm. the more practical side. And so, yeah, I don't know, it was kind of, I wouldn't say on a whim. The first idea was maybe kind of a whim, but then we were like, hey, we could really do this.
Yeah, and absolutely no regrets. It's been a hell of a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to continuing to go through this.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed it. All right, so we have another kind of behind-the-scenes question about what our task breakdown is for the production side of things. So which of us does what aspects?
Mm-hmm.
So it all starts when, well, we read the chapters that we're supposed to read, obviously.
Yep.
And then I take notes on the chapters. So I kind of have the detailed note structure where we do the point-by-point going through the plot of those chapters. So mm-hmm. that takes me a while. And so because I spend a lot of time doing that, Alex does most of the editing for the podcast. Also, he's a lot faster at editing than the podcast than I am because I'm too much of a perfectionist. And I get very caught up on minor things. And then after Alex edits, we both listen to the final version to make sure there's nothing that got missed. If there is, we'll go back and fix it. And then we upload it to our platform.
Yep, that basically sums it up. And then on the social media front, if you're seeing any tweets or if you happen to see us post on Reddit, that is me. I run all of our social media because we need to keep Elaine away from the spoilers or keep the spoilers away from Elaine. I don't mm-hmm. know the right way to say that, but maybe a little bit of both.
It's a little bit ironic because you don't actually have a personal Twitter.
No, I don't. So all of my Twitter time and energy goes into our combined Twitter for the podcast.
All right. And so we have one last question, which is why all of our, speaking of social media, why all of our social media and such is under Nerd I Say More rather than just Pod Emperor of Dune. And so basically it's kind of a bet hedging thing. So when we were getting into doing the podcast thing, we didn't want to limit our future endeavors to the one podcast. So we wanted to have a sort of integrated background account so that if we do other podcasts in the future that have different names, we can use the same central accounts for them.
Yep. And like we said regarding our interests, when Elaine says additional podcasts, we mean in other franchises as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we're strongly considering. So you heard what our interests are. We're definitely planning to branch out at some point.
Yeah, so we don't have an exact timeline on that, but at some point in the future, we would like to do other types of podcasts, so maybe on a TV series instead or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something we're definitely thinking about, how and when and what we would do that with. But if we do, it would have its own title, but then everything would still be centralized under the Nerd I Say More sort of name, I guess.
Yep, exactly.
And if you're wondering where that name came from, we basically looked up a bunch of expressions that had the word need in it that could be made into a pun with nerd and looked for ones that weren't already the names of other things and we thought made a good pun.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the name of the podcast itself, Alex came up with that himself and I think it was perfect. I think it'll be tough to come up with such a perfect title for other franchises.
Yeah, I'm just surprised it wasn't taken.
Yeah, kind of surprising. We did look, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find anything. All right, so I think that's all we have for today.
Yeah, I believe it is. So it's been great talking about the trailer, great answering these questions. Hopefully we're going to have a lot more Dune to talk about with where this is going as becoming like a new upcoming property of Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, the sequel is already greenlit, right?
I don't think it's officially greenlit yet. I'm not
But everyone seems certain, like, there doesn't seem to be doubt that it's happening.
So I think it's the type of thing that, like, the movie, how's it going
to
fail with
like, this it would great have to bomb spectacularly.
It would have to be an absolutely enormous bomb, mm-hmm. right?
And then they also are still, as far as I know, developing the Sisterhood TV series.
Mm-hmm. Haven't heard a lot about Jesuit. That. But
no. Yeah. Well, I mean, COVID probably didn't help.
Yeah, probably not.
And that would be released on HBO Max, because that's Warner Brothers is part of that now?
I believe so.
Well, maybe one day we'll have news about that.
Hopefully.
Is Villeneuve supposed to direct an episode of that? Like the pilot or something?
Yeah, I think he's directing the pilot.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I'll look into that later and see if there's been any updates.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, anyway, we were signing off.
Yeah.
Hope you guys enjoyed our bonus episode.
So until next time, I'm Alex.
I'm Elaine.
Thanks for listening. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Pod Emperor of Dune. If you enjoyed listening to us, we'd appreciate a review on your podcasting host of choice. And be sure to let your friends know about us. You can find us on Twitter under the handle NerdIsayMore, or send us an email at nerdisaymore@gmail.com. If you'd like to support us further, please go to patreon.com/nerdisaymore, where you can also get access to exclusive content.